You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. Hey guys, and welcome to the fourth and final special edition episode for October. And in this one, I invited Aaron Harvey, former guest on the show, founder of madeofmillions.com and a fan favorite, to interview Crystal Anderson. And Crystal is the co-founder and head of creative at the agency A Very Good Job. And she is also a judge on HBO's Craftopia. And Aaron chats with Crystal in this one about her OCD story, violent intrusive thoughts, going to inpatient treatment, getting diagnosed in her 30s. They discuss how her themes change week to week, getting intrusive thoughts about her dog, sexual orientation and existential themed OCD. They talk about race and culture and how this can impact access to care and community. They discuss their advocacy, when people use the term I'm so OCD, depression and much more. So thank you so much to Aaron for his time on this one, and of course thank you so much to Crystal too for her time and sharing her story. I appreciate both of them. And as you know, Treat My OCD sponsor the weekly Sunday episode before this special edition OCD Peers have decided to support our work. So thanks to OCD Peers for sponsoring this week's special edition of the podcast. OCD Peers is a group support practice designed for ongoing or drop-in support for individuals with OCD, anxiety, PTSD, and support groups for minorities and LGBTQIA+ and mental health. Each day of the week, groups are run at different times to accommodate worldwide time zones and cover different aspects and themes of OCD. Their peer leaders are certified, trained group facilitators and are in recovery from mental health and/or addiction. OCD peer groups are safe, supportive, and they use a HIPAA-compliant platform to protect your privacy. For more information on OCD peers and to sign up for a group, visit them at ocdpeers.com. That's ocdpeers.com, and the link will be in the description. And thanks as always to you guys for listening to the podcast. I deeply appreciate it. As you may have heard in the last episode, we've broke 300 episodes, a number I never ever had in my mind. So thank you for listening thus far. And without further ado, here is Aaron interviewing Crystal.
Hi, and welcome to the OCD Stories podcast. This is Aaron Harvey in for Stu on the sixth anniversary of the OCD Stories. Very excited to be here with our guest today, Crystal Anderson. Hi, Crystal.
Hi.
I'm so glad to have you on this because we've been in this weird little OCD journey together for a while, but like separately, but like on the same parallel wave and working together on different advocacy projects in New York. So I figure I'll just keep it short and start it there and ask you, what's your story? What is your story with you as a human being and in this condition that you've experienced?
All right. Well, let's go way back into time. We'll go to 1982, or as the young kids say, the young kids are saying the late 1980 or the 1900s, which is just sending me on another whole downward spiral. But yes, 1982, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, my parents, Black woman named Lydia, big, huge Italian dude named Paul, met at a amusement park. And I was born in 1982, 9 months later. Had a really fantastic childhood. I mean, you know, I always talk about my privilege. My parents were business owners and, you know, they owned a franchise of Montessori schools. And my mom also suffers with mental health, diagnosed mental health disorders. She's generalized anxiety, panic disorder. So taking medication and talking about going to a psychiatrist was always really normalized in my house, which, you know, is super incredibly fucking lucky, especially in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, when it was just, you know, I mean, there's still a huge stigma attached to it, but especially during that time. So, you know, for me, my OCD and anxiety really started when I was a kid, but obviously I didn't have the language to attach a name to it. So, you know, lots of really morbid sort of thoughts, lots of existential, like looking in the mirror, trying to figure out what, like who I was. And like, yeah, it just like, yeah, I was like, I was like a really sort of not, I wasn't a dark kid. I was really light, really happy, but you know, asked a lot of weird questions. And I just so happened to have parents who were really open to those questions and weren't like, that is not for a kid to be talking about. You know, so yeah, and that's sort of my childhood. Really dealt with that. It wasn't too terrible. I was able to manage it as best as a person who's undiagnosed, who's also a child can. Then went to college, you know, spent a lot of time drinking and smoking pot and doing what college kids did. So while I did deal with it a bit, I had lots of other not so healthy coping mechanisms that I used. And then, you know, moved to New York after that. Not was pretty okay for a while and then hit the brick wall of not okay. And, you know, just like all of those thoughts that I've been having for my whole life just really like met at the intersection of, you know, you get fired from your job, you're at home by yourself all day. And those thoughts just sort of like come out to play. Lots of, you know, suicidal ideation, super, you know, like sexually deviant, as you know, folks say, dark thoughts, lots of thoughts of harming, like self-harm and harming my partner. And then find like, and you know, that's the thing about OCD. It's like, it's just such a tricky fucking disease that like, sometimes you know that what you're thinking is intrusive and irrational and is not aligned with who you are as a person. And then other times you trick yourself into saying, maybe that's a trick. That thought that I'm having that this is just a trick is also a trick. And I really am a monster. It's like, it's just, you know, that's sort of where, like, that's always my trajectory, you know, depending on the day. And so finally I checked myself into inpatient emergency psychiatric hospital. And then they kept me for about a month or two inpatient and then did an additional like month and a half, half outpatient, inpatient sort of situation, and then went all the way, like went home by myself. And so that's sort of like, you know, the trajectory of like getting the actual diagnosis. I got that my actual diagnosis when I was 36, and I'm 39 now. So was it 36? No, maybe 34. Yeah. 34. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's a long time to live with something and really just know that your brain is wired differently, but not sure how. Because mm-hmm. even when, you know, I got older and like talking about going to therapy or like I have anxiety or I'm like, you know, I have depression, like those things became really normalized. Saying that you have really fucked up thoughts about killing your partner is just not something you could talk about, you know, at lunch with your coworkers. You can certainly talk about like therapy being so stressful and how you got dragged by your therapist for, you know, whatever, but having those conversations just off the table, unless you're talking to someone who understands what you're going through. And in some of those like social settings or work settings, just never, rarely did I find someone who could understand that. And yeah, so that's who I am, you know, just a ray of sunshine wrapped in some fuckery, but you know, that's me.
So, okay. I mean, it was making I was getting anxiety and my chest is getting a little tight, like thinking about how there, for me too, there was a moment of a lot of like personal struggle that really exacerbated the symptomology. Like things looking back that I had experienced, like a lot of the themes that you mentioned from a young age, things I didn't even think until years later when I really knew what OCD was. I was looking back and I was like, oh wait, I was a kid and I was like totally obsessed with that constantly all the time. Like, oh, okay. I had these behavioral characteristics, but I wasn't really sure what they were. But like you said, I mean, you were 34, I was 33. I mean, what a horror timeline, you know? I mean, did you ever try, like, did you ever, you know, dabble with like testing out, opening up to certain people about it? Or were you just so scared about repercussions?
I would, you know, dabble with people who are really close to me in like, you know, like, for instance, if we'd be waiting on the train, right? And I'd be like, have you guys ever thought about like, you know, sometimes you just like get in your head where you just like jump in front of the train. And they'd be like, oh my God, everybody thinks about that. But I'm like, oh, but have you ever thought about, you know, a kid in a stroller and throwing the kid in the stroller in front of the train? Like, so you know what I mean? I would dabble with the first part and be like,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll save the kid in the stroller thing for a later time. But like, okay, they're open to these like intrusive thoughts as a thing that like is can be normalized, knowing that it doesn't make you a monster.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I feel like I could always say the most inappropriate thing in the room and I would try to like just give like a little bit just to test it.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I guess like looking back, I mean, so you know, in OCD land, obviously there's just the feeling of like intrusive thoughts can attack any kind of value you have, like whatever your identity is, whatever you believe in, whatever you want. It could be your religion, your sexual identity, anything. It's going to come and tell you that, no, are you sure about that? And and then you go down the spiral. So, you know, some of the buckets, like the broader buckets that are, you know, largely documented or like religious related, sex or sexuality or sexual deviance or things like that related, and then harm related. So do you like, maybe you could elaborate a little bit more on like what are kind of some of the core themes that you experience, and then did you experience them like shifting and evolving? And when that happened, did all the questions just open back up again or?
Yeah, my themes really do, like, you know, it's like, I tell people it's like this. It's like, you know, sometimes if you get into a habit, like where you're just like ordering from Seamless or DoorDash, wherever, you're like, you know what, I'm on a sushi kick. So I'm just gonna have sushi for the whole week. And then one day while you're eating your sushi, you're like, oh shit, you know what I really want though is some pizza. And then you're like, okay, let me finish out the rest of this week with the sushi. And then like for the next 2 weeks, I'm gonna be on my pizza kick. That's what it's like for me with my themes. It's like, mm-hmm. 1 week, my theme is like, you know, you're not gay, right? You know that. Even though you live with your partner and you love your partner, but also, do you love your partner? Like, do you? Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that conversation for next week, but let's just continue to think about you not being gay this week. And then next week, we'll think that you're gay, but that you don't love your partner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? So it just really does like sort of evolve and change week to week or day to day. You know, sometimes I am more obsessed with something for longer periods of time. It may be a 3-4 week period of time. And then other times it could just be like a couple days. And, you know, it really is just sort of like the OCD du jour, what's on the menu for the day for me. Lately it's been a lot of like, stuff around my dog, like my dog, like me coming, like we'll leave my dog at home, best dog in the universe, Blanche, and you know, it's like when we get home, she's gonna be dead. Someone's either gonna have come in the house, slit her throat, we're gonna find her, or she's gonna have eaten something, or you know, she's gonna have pulled something off the shelf and the shelf is gonna be on her, so we're gonna find her at home dead, which, you know, is really dark.
Yeah,
and obviously. And so, you know, it makes it difficult for me to enjoy myself when I'm out, because I'm like, I wonder if it's happening right now. Like, is it happening right now? You know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And then I just have to like negotiate that with myself. Like, okay, if this is happening, there's not much I can do. It's going to really fucking suck.
Yeah.
But this is where we're at, you know? And it's I'm not one of those people who, like, well, I'm not good at meditation. I'm not good at like mindfulness, because like, I'm just not. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, trying to center myself and bring myself back to reality, has always been really difficult for me when I'm having, you know, like when those themes are really fucking hardcore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. When you are experiencing some of these themes, especially like violent ones or like dark sexual thoughts, like what, do you experience both like voices or like, how would you characterize? Sometimes I struggle to characterize as a voice, as a thought that's telling me I'm a pedophile or this or that. And then like, what about like imagery and how immersive is that for you?
Oh yeah. It's both. A lot of times, like, it's my voice, you know, like, or my internal voice of being like, you are this, this is what's going to happen, this is what has happened. Or sometimes it's just images, just like, you know, I'd like to think like a lot of, I imagine, and I don't know the science on this, I imagine a lot of people who have OCD are incredibly fucking creative, because the amounts of mental gymnastics that I have to do to like build this thing in my head or allow it to be built in my head. I mean, it's really creative. There's no shortage of like it could be a movie on a screen. You know what I mean? Sometimes when it's just like these images that are just coming and popping into my head at different times. You know what I
mean? No, that is totally true. And I guess we're both sitting here as creative directors in our own businesses. So there's got to be something to that.
There's something to it. At least that's what they give us for all this fucking, you know, bullshit.
I know. Yeah, it's so interesting because sometimes, you know, those voices are so transparent and clear and immediate. And that's what makes it so like, whoa, like, oh, you're not gay, you are gay, you're a murderer, you're a pedophile. And to hear your own voice doing that, like you said earlier, when you hear that, you automatically have to question the validity because you don't have a separation of like, if it's you, it's you. If it's you, it's you. Then why are you telling me that? Is that, that's like just a, you know, as a protector of yourself and people around you, you're like, oh, that's a red flag. Like that's
word. Yeah. Yeah. It's like you've been taught to trust yourself. Everyone, like, you know, especially like toxic wellness that has sort of taken over, is like thoughts become things and like you can manifest anything. And I'm like, shit. Like if that's what we're doing, it's going to be a problem. Like, you know what I mean? And so I've learned that thoughts literally just don't become things. They just don't. That's what I've told them. Like, that's what I've taught myself, is that my thoughts, all of them in totality, don't become things. They are just, my thoughts are just things. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like the best advice I've ever given myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It creates a little separation.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about sexual orientation, OCD. It's, I think, really important to hear your voice on this, because when we started intrusivethoughts.org like 6 years ago, right? And we were looking at all the different themes of OCD. One of them at the time was called homosexual OCD.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
I mean, you are straight and the theme is that you're gay, or vice versa, or both.
The theme is that you're gay, and that it's in that case, in that context, because the majority of people who were reporting this at the time maybe identified as straight.
Got it.
It's an assumption I'm making, but like this is why this was happening, right? But what happened was that it cast a really negative perspective on, you know, homosexuals with OCD or queer community, gay community with OCD, because what ended up happening is it ended up saying, okay, well, that's a bad thing. Like harm OCD is a bad thing and homosexual OCD is a bad thing. Like I shouldn't be having these thoughts.
Right.
And what we had to do very quickly as a charity was recognize, like, just putting that on the internet, even though there was search traffic for that phrase, it was setting a negative tone and message. So we shifted to like sexual identity OCD or sexual orientation OCD, which is really what it is. You have an identity, and that's what you believe in your bones to be your identity, but then you have these doubting thoughts like you do with any other aspect of OCD. So I just wanted to hear a little bit more about your, you know, your perspective on that idea of like OCD attacking any value, any belief structure, and how that relates to your sexual orientation. Because I just think it's really important for people to hear that it is an absolute both direction situation.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I've known that I was queer for longer in my life. I'm almost 40, for longer in my life than I haven't known. Right. So, you know, that's just where I'm at. But still to this day, like I have a partner that I have been with for 3.5 years. Like we are very much in love. We have a business. Like I enjoy all of parts of being her partner, both physically, emotionally, all that. Before her, I was in a 9-year relationship with my ex-partner, who's also a woman. Did not change the fact that there would be days or weeks where I convinced myself that I was not gay. that I needed to be with a man. And like, that was what the voice was telling me. It's like being gay is wrong. Being like, you know, you are going to go to hell. Like, and you also, you're fake, like, or like this idea, like, you know, you're faking being gay. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you doing this? You know what I mean? And it scared the shit out of me. Cause I, like, even though I knew in my heart of hearts, it's like sexuality is a spectrum, right? So it's not as easy as me being able to convince myself that I've never killed somebody.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I know that.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I think with some of the themes, it's very black and white. It's still terrifying that you might be a pedophile, or you might murder someone, or you might have run someone over with your car, or this or that. All that's very scary. Mm-hmm. But when there's gray area, when there's a spectrum of humanity involved in any way, do I really love my partner? Mm-hmm. Am I attracted to someone of the same or opposite sex, or whatever might be going through your head is a spectrum of the human experience. And those shades of gray is what OCD just goes into real, real hard. Yeah.
And it's just like a moist spot for mold to grow, those gray areas. You know what I mean? Because it's like, there was a point where I dated men. Men were terrible, but for me anyway, but you know, I had sex with men. Like, so in my head, I'm like, okay, well, you did it once. Why wouldn't you do it again? Mm-hmm. Why don't you just date men?
Well, like, you're building the case. Like, that's what everybody with OCD does. They look back and they find a piece of evidence to validate the thought. And then they find another one and another one. And that's just our like mean little cycle. Yeah. I think it's
hard for me. That one was really hard. Like, loving your partner and also sexual identity are hard for reasons that we've talked about. It's like, I can sit here and be like, okay, I know that I've never like had psychosis, killed somebody, covered it up. Like, still fucking scary, because maybe I did and I just don't remember. But like, for now, I can, you know, make this right in my head. This just did not happen. You know, I can also make it right that I don't want to kill my mom the next time I see her. Like,
exactly.
Yeah. But this one, there is a lot of gray area that may be the case. You know what I mean? I'm glad that people, because that's one of those ones, again, that people, it's right up there, honestly, with like, you know, some of the more like sexually deviant ones, simply because people want to be so firm in their identity, and myself included, that anything outside of that, that someone like something is saying that you are not who you have purported to be, is really fucking scary. That's like when those things come, I get really scared.
Yeah, you know absolutely. I mean, and then I think earlier you said existential, you also mentioned religion. And, you know, I grew up in a very Christian household, and I think, I do think there's some commonality of highly anxious people in that sort of religious environment, where anything that falls outside of the black and white path that was laid out for you, for your future, all the way to the grave and beyond, becomes any of the gray, again, it becomes like super, super scary. Yep. So I was curious your experience or perspective on like, other things like soul and body and when you die and how much preoccupation and rumination and, you know, how does your mood affect your focus and obsession with some of these ideas?
Yeah. I mean, that one, like the what happens after you die rumination has been pretty strong as I've sort of, you know, gotten older. I turn 40 next year, you know, so the idea of my time on earth sort of being on the, like, not the wind down, that's really dramatic, but you know what I mean? Like the first sort of like part of life has happened, where like the beginning, like, or the baby phase, teenager, young adult, now I'm just an adult. And then it's just only adulthood from here. And so that's been really hard for me, being like, okay, so now you think like, death is much more imminent. You know what I mean? And so thinking about what happens after not only I pass away, a lot of my themes have been around after my bloodline passes away. So then we're forgotten. Mm-hmm. What does that look like to be forgotten? And then also, what does it look like for the world to end? Mm-hmm. So when the world doesn't exist anymore, and there's just nothing ever again. Do you know what I mean? Like that has been a really, like, even now I get a little anxious. Like that's a bit.
I was going to ask you, what is the difference between someone being, you know, a philosopher or a writer or journalist writing about these things in a healthy way versus the way that you experience them?
Because I have no business wondering what happens when the world, it should not affect my day to day to wonder what happens in what could be, if people get their shit together and stop ruining the earth, what could be millions of years from now. It really should not have any like while I'm brushing my teeth. That's not what I should be like deeply, deeply concerned with and looking at myself in the mirror, trying to like find like a connection. Like, because with that also comes like, is this real? Like, is this like,
yeah, you know, all of the conversation we're having right now on the weird internet, and you're in New York or in LA and I'm in New York and this all is.
Yes. Like, is what does all of this, like, is it real? You know, so like those all play hand in hand with my sort of existential themes, is just trying to figure it out. And I'm like, I'm 39 years old. It's not like I'm, you know, 95.
Yeah.
Like for most people, I'm considered relatively young. You know what I mean? But for me, I'm just like, ooh, you're really getting up there. And I know that it's tied to my OCD and not to my actual thoughts. I am completely able-bodied and have the privilege of walking and doing and whatever the fuck I want to do.
Looking good. We're 40. Yeah. We're looking good too. I just turned 40 and I can tell you it's also the way up. I'm feeling great.
Yes.
It's not bad. But yeah, so you're saying about this idea of, let's say, I'll give you an example, religion. Mm-hmm. All right. So religion is very haunting to me. I go through many like death spirals with it over the years. When I went to work with a therapist for the first time, they basically told me to stop thinking about it. Now, this is, imagine that, you know, the whole basis of your existence is if you die, which you could get hit by lightning or anything else in the moment. If you die and your head and heart aren't in the right space on this topic, on this specific topic,
yes,
then you are going to burn in hell for eternal damnation. So the therapist clearly does not understand the urgency here.
No.
You know, with this topic is very, very urgent.
Like,
right?
I need it here and I need it now. No.
Exactly. So have you ever had an experience where therapists are basically telling you to set aside topics that you think are of critical importance, or how did you navigate that?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of times so diagnosed at 34, didn't have a therapist who really understood what it means to have OCD until a couple days ago. You know what I mean? Like, so they, you know, they tell you to focus on your breathing, or you need to like find these other things. And I'm like, no, I need you to tell me, I need some help in understanding that I don't like young boys. Like, that's what I need.
Yeah.
I need that now. I need you to understand that. And also the fear of saying that to a therapist who doesn't get it. And now you are in jail.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Like sometimes I'll even get scared when I'll be reading, like, you know, Apple gives you your news for the day. And there is a story the other day about a pedophile who, like, I don't know, downloaded a bunch of files. And I'm like, fuck, what if I had that on my phone? And I just don't even know it.
Right.
And I could go to jail because I'm already thinking about these things. Maybe I did it while I was sleeping. Maybe I, like, you know. So, yes, I've had that experience quite a few times, which is why I think it is so vitally important for therapists who OCD treatment is not their number one modality, really should release patients safely, of course, to therapists who, like, that is their main sort of focus, because it could get really dangerous not doing that. I've been in that position.
I mean, it's such an important thing to say. And it's, you know, we're both coming in the, we're only in the mental health and OCD space because we care, because we dedicate our time and energy to it, and through nonprofit or other efforts. Like, it's hard to see the capitalism in it sometimes.
It's really difficult.
People booking. And I mean, my first psychiatrist I had, I was referred to because he supposedly knew OCD. But then later on, after I tried 6 different medications with him, and a year later, and making content for Intrusive Thoughts, I was like, hey, would you like to be in a video to be an expert on like medication OCD? He's like, oh, I'm not an OCD expert. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I kind of knew that, but like, yeah, if you don't... I
wish you could have said it sooner.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
It really is. It's like, you know, yeah, it's really tough. It is not like the oppression or like the mental oppression Olympics where you're like, well, this mental health disorder is much tougher than this one. I mean, there's millions of them. I'm just saying for what I need, you know, like, yes, yeah. I also suffer from, you know, depression, but I can sort of like find someone to take care of that for me very differently than I can find someone to take care of my OCD.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I need someone who just like gets is a fault. Yeah. For sure.
And yes, and it's as you know, very difficult to find. And then, of course, I think the saddest thing, and I, you know, I say this with respect to the therapy community, the saddest thing is as the demand increases, the rates increase, the access goes down. Yep. It's hard for me to find somebody. If I reach out to, I mean, I'm as connected as I am, it's extremely difficult to find.
I hit you up not too long ago. Remember?
I know.
It's the same thing. Yeah. Like I have, again, privilege and access to health insurance, the money to pay for these things, like whatever. I often think about Black, brown, and poor people, who don't have access and don't have the language and are struggling in, you know, these small pockets all across the world, but specifically all across America. And they've just been written off as crazy. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So I pulled some stats recently. This was on one of my intense, sometimes I just go through these intense whims of, I don't know, competitive obsessions and other things with Made of Millions and other. Anyways, I went on Demographics Pro, and I have access to the agency, and I basically like pulled a bunch of accounts. So four or five of the leading OCD related Instagram accounts.
Okay.
And on average, it was about 91% of all Instagram followers across these leading Instagram accounts on OCD mm-hmm. were white, and the community's white. And we think about like what you were saying earlier about, you know, sharing anything about even a suicidal thought, you can get Baker acted. We get through our community email from people all over the world who've been, you know, they've lost their teaching jobs. They've lost their kids. Literally, they've lost access to their children because they said, hey, I'm having these thoughts that don't feel like me. But like, I don't know what to do. And we need to protect the kid I love. Like, I shouldn't be having these. The amount of unnecessary pain and suffering, as you said, in Black and brown communities and, you know, really any minority community, especially in the US, like it's colossal. It's unbelievable to even think about.
Yeah. It's almost insurmountable. Like, you cannot figure out. And that is, I mean, I always say this is why I live the way that I live as publicly as I do, is because, you know, I'm queer, I'm Black, I'm a woman. And I want all three of those sort of spaces to have someone to be like, okay, she's living as best as she can with this thing. I didn't have that. I still don't have that, really, like another Black person that I'd like that I know in my age range who suffers in the ways that I do. But so that's why it's so important to me. You know what I mean? Sometimes I have to tell people like, listen, I'm not a doctor. I know what I know, that works for me, but just know like people like that look like me have this disease, even though the general sort of wellness and mental health community, it looks very white, looks very straight, looks very like, you know, blonde. That's just not the reality. A lot of people just don't have the language. I just happen to have the language. Thank God for miracles.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's through and through. It's in the practitioners. It's in the lack of cultural competence and care. I mean, I go back to like the most simple thing. Like when I first opened up and shared my story, it was like, I just would love to tell that 12-year-old version of myself that like these intrusive thoughts, they actually aren't necessarily your identity, they're whatever. And like, there's a path forward. And I feel like that is it. In a way, it's really beautiful because that's my life mission now. It's my life work, right? And you think about, God, imagine being in elementary school or middle school and having to watch something and say like, hey, sometimes your brain will kick off thoughts about everything you care about. Your parents, your family, your dog, your religion, you're this, you're that. And you know what? Sometimes that actually is not really what your values are and what your identity is. And like, if that's really giving you anxiety and making you feel anxious, like, here's a way forward. And it's such a simple thing to say, you know, it's so easy, and it would help so much to at least level the playing field. So I question for you like then. So let's say that, you know, it's very difficult for anyone to access. You get into, lesser served communities and it's virtually impossible to access care. What's your advice? Like, how do you, beyond knowing what OCD is, like is it getting fully educated on it? Like, if you are struggling to access care, what do you need to know about this condition? What tools or processes or things do you employ? Like, what makes you feel healthier, you know, just short of medication and traditional sort of like therapy?
I honestly have to say first, I wouldn't be able to, for me, have coping mechanisms if I didn't have medicine and I didn't have a psychiatrist. I just wouldn't. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be able to cope. So I need people to understand that, like, that privilege in and of itself, like the time to take away from my day to go talk to my therapist for an hour once a week, the ability to pay for my medicine, whether it's out of pocket or, you know, with my health insurance, like I have that. So I couldn't do it without those things. Do you know what I mean? But for people who do not have an access to care, like my heart fucking breaks. Cause it's like, I couldn't imagine a life where I didn't have access to care. So I don't know if I would be alive. For me, you know what I mean? Like, I've been down this road. But you know, I really just like, even now when I, you know, cause your therapy is once a week, sometimes like medicine isn't a fail safe, you know? So I have to just remind myself that I am not a monster. Mm-hmm. Like that thoughts don't become things. Thoughts are things.
Hmm.
Thoughts don't become things. Thoughts are just things.
Mm-hmm.
They just come in and they come out. Some of them are yours. Some of them are not. If you want to fuck a peanut butter and jelly, that's probably yours. If you want to kill your partner, it's probably not.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, if you want to like order $100 worth of like oysters and crab legs on DoorDash, that's probably you because you're greedy. Like, I know that about me. If, you know, I want to like run down the street naked, that's probably not me. Like, it's not, you know, like, and that's how I have, like, that's the work that I do with myself. Like, I interrogate my thoughts, not in like a way that is unhealthy, but it allows me to have levity and some grip on what's going through my head, as opposed to being like, you know, some people practice like, just let it go through, just see it and acknowledge it, let it go through. For me, like, I treat them like people who showed up at the party and didn't bring a six pack. And I'm like, wait, okay, what are you doing here? What's happening? If the next time you come, bring something with you, okay? Don't just be showing up here unannounced. And why are you here? What was happening with my day that you decided to show up? Sometimes there's an answer for it that I can like pinpoint and go back to. Sometimes I'm just like, oh, I was just having a good day and you just decided to show up. I see what you did there. It's fucked up, but like, cool, no problem. You know, so that's really my main coping mechanism, is like interrogating my thoughts with kindness to myself, And sometimes it really works. Sometimes it doesn't. I still think of myself as a monster some days, and that's just not going to go away. And I'm also okay with now being like, you know what? Some days you're just going to think that. Some days you are not even going to be able to think that this is OCD. You're just going to believe that these are your thoughts and that's just what it is. And those are going to be fucked up days.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one, I think you're getting to humor. Like there's a level of humor that is necessary to make the condition survivable on the day to day.
Yeah.
It's the pure absurdity of what goes through your head. If you can't, like you said, be like, what are you doing showing up to the party without a beer? That's some beer. Like if you can't do that, then you should try. Cause it's really it's probably the only way to
do that. It's just to make the day to day easier because like, these are your homies. You like some of them. Most of them are really fucking like shitty.
Yeah.
But they're your homies for better or worse. And like, they just be showing up whenever the fuck they want.
Yeah.
So like, okay, I just need to get a handle on these folks. So that they like, if they do show up and I'm having a really good day with my other homies that are like my peanut butter and jelly or my crab legs, like you're not going to ruin my entire fucking day.
But yeah.
You know what I mean? Some days you might win and you know what? Hey, fair enough. But most of the days are going to be a crab leg, peanut butter and jelly type of day, not a show up unannounced with no beer type of day. That's the hope. And so that's for people who don't have access to care in the ways that a lot of, you know, or like that some folks do. Those are sort of like conversations that I try to have like on social or with people who will like hop in my DMs and they're like, hey, you know, I'm having these thoughts. And I'm like, I'm not a doctor, but I also know that this person is coming to me, this person who does not know me, is because they do not have access to anything other than a person who has access to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's my responsibility on some level to offer them something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't take that lightly, you mm-hmm. know, with the amount of privilege that I have. Even mm-hmm. on my dark days where I'm like, fuck, man, I really just don't want to be an OCD advocate today. Like I got my own shit going on. I'm in a really dark place. I'm trying to like, you know, not go in the kitchen because I've got a weird obsession with knives today. So I'm just trying to like make a good day. You know what I mean? Like just trying to eat sushi so I can just eat it with my hands. And that's all I got to think about.
Yeah.
But that's the rent that I pay to live the life that I live. Is to be able to be a service to people who don't have access when I do have access.
Yeah.
If I can give them a little bit of that.
It's the most beautiful thing. It really is. And it can become part of the healing advocacy for sure. But as you said, it can also be extremely difficult. And I guess something that I found happening with when I first worked on intrusivethoughts.org, which was like the first Made in Millions project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I first wrote my story, it took forever and it was like super long. And then I cut it down and cut it down. Then an editor at Fastco edited it down further and then pushed it out to the world. Very quickly, I found myself in a position where someone's like, well, we have a 5-minute interview. What's your story? Then what did you do about it? And what's the future of mental health and blah, blah, blah. It's like, how do you cut all of that pain down to like, here's your soundbite.
Yeah. It's difficult. And it's also not a like a linear path where you're like, well, you know, I had that one thought about like, might've killed somebody, but then I got good, found medicine, still have those thoughts. But now I just want everybody to, you know, live a really good life. You know, it's like, it's never going to be linear. There's a million different ways to attack OCD, and some of them work and some of them don't. And everybody's journey is so different. And that's why I think the work of things like OCD stories and what Made of Millions is doing is that all those voices are different. So mm-hmm. if you go to OCD stories and you find something that isn't like, you don't see yourself, maybe you'll go to Made of Millions or you see yourself or vice versa. And so there needs to be all mm-hmm. of these different places, or like me, for instance, you know what I mean? Like, or Windsor Flynn, there's all of these places where you can find mm-hmm. people that look like you or have experiences, or their parents or their, you know, dog parents, whatever. There's something for everyone. That's the hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's my hope anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's okay in the OCD community online. It's, it almost is, it's very competitive now in a way, it's okay, but
it's weird though.
It is weird. And it's like, you know, I don't know. Everybody's chasing something now. If the awareness is increasing, that's wonderful. But I think it's really okay to stop following all of that for periods of time. I had to do that. You know, people I love so much in this community, I had to unfollow them because, you know what? I couldn't handle seeing fucking OCD shit anymore, reminding me of the thing I'm trying to forget. I'm trying to move on with my life.
Why I came on social, to just like not get my brain to not think about it.
Yeah.
No, I've 1000% feel that. I saw your post about this, and maybe like, I don't know, 5 days later, I just muted everybody because it's like the same thing. It's like, I just need to like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like for me, social, for my experience with how I engage with other content is sort of like a more mindless thing. Like, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? I'm just there looking at fashion or looking at like funny memes or bullshit. I don't really need to talk about like trigger warning, sexual. I mean, I know, it's already here. I just thought about that 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
On my own, without any prompt from something, some like infographic on Instagram. So
totally.
And I totally think people should like remove, like as they can, remove it for a few days at the very least. And they might have like a sort of like change of thought mm-hmm. about like, how they interact with that content.
Yeah. And the first time that we met up, we actually only met through like a quick email and then immediately went on like a televised thing or whatever it was, digitally streaming thing with Yahoo and all this, whatever, Verizon Media.
God, her team. Yeah.
But there was almost this like immediate understanding of like, okay, you have OCD, I have OCD. I think we're on the same page.
Yeah.
We can do this. But I think you said something there, might've been backstage or something, but about when people get mental health or OCD wrong in terms of their understanding of it. And then like, what's your approach to that? Or what are your thoughts on what's your approach to it? Cause you said something really compelling to me.
Do you mean like in terms of like people who say shit like I'm so OCD, like those sure. types of people?
Yeah.
Yeah. They drive me up a fucking wall. Like, it's like, because it's like, at this point, it's like, we spent the last 2 years at home. I know you've seen a thing or two on the internet. Like, yeah. We've all seen it. Like, no, like, just because you put your fucking cookies in a cookie jar, you basic ass bitch, that does not, like, that doesn't mean, I mean, so OCD is just not a thing. It's not a, it's just like everybody knows that now. And so like those sorts, like it's really fucking hard. Cause I'm like, it's like the running joke in my house. My fiance is a Capricorn. So she's like, buy the book, keeps shit all together. And I'm like, I really wish I could give you the like OCD that's like really super clean and not the, I want to murder you OCD, but like, hey, this is what you got. You know, like people just don't, like, it just does such a disservice to what it means to live with a really scary disease to say, you know, to reduce it to, I like to wash my hands a lot.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, the pandemic really made my OCD so much better because like, I'm like, everybody was washing their hands and I'm just like, fuck you. Like, are you serious? Like,
I think what you wrote one time was that you you give people the benefit of the doubt the first time and you educate them.
Yeah, I do. I did. That was like young spry Crystal, old crotchety right. Crystal, old after a couple years of pandemic Crystal. I was like, hey, asshole.
I know
you've been on the internet for the last 2 years because that's where I've been. So, you know, but yes, like truly though, I do give people the benefit of the doubt. Like, you know, when somebody I know pretty well posted something on social the other day and she was just like, oh, you know, my OCD is flaring up and like showed a picture of her sock drawer. And I just like hit her on the side and I was like, dude, I know you know that I have OCD and because we've talked about it and like, I just want better for you than to just be out here on the internet sounding like a fool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like it didn't even cross my mind. I was like, yeah, well, tell a friend to tell a friend. Like, that's what we're on now. Like, we're just not calling something else. Like, you like to be organized and like, proud of you. So glad that your sock drawer looks so great.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what this is. You know what I
mean? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's like, that's where I'm at, especially if I know somebody.
Yeah, no, it's fair. Okay. I got a few questions from Stu that I have to ask you.
He's
going to get mad. All right. So if you could pick up the phone and call 20-year-old Crystal, what would you say?
I would say, where was 20-year-old Crystal? Okay, yep. I'd say, hey, asshole, listen, it's me. life is really, really good. Like, it's really great. You got a lot of good stuff happening for you. It's going to get dark before it gets lighter. Like, where you're at now is light. You're going to go through some darkness, and then it's going to be light again. But it's going to be worth it. That's what I would say at 20. I'd scare the shit out of 20-year-old Crystal, but then be like, but it's going to be good at the end.
Oh, that's amazing. You have a billboard in New York City, LA, wherever you want to put it. Actually, maybe back in South Carolina somewhere.
South Carolina, okay.
What does it say?
My immediate response, because I thought about it being in South Carolina, was don't be racist. But I think before don't be racist, and what can be the umbrella is just don't be stupid, with a picture of me in the P of stupid. Just a picture of me. Because all of that falls under. It's like, wear your mask, get your vaccinate. Don't be racist. Don't be transphobic. Like, don't say I have OCD because you like your sunglasses to all lay the same way in your drawer. Like, don't be stupid. That's what it would say.
Yeah. No, that's.
I just buy one of those. Thanks for the idea, Stu.
Nice. And I guess I could literally ask you questions for hours and hours, but to keep this in a reasonable time frame, I maybe just ask you a couple of, these are a couple of questions that are like maybe more questioned or contested in the OCD land. So, OCD, like, so you talked about having depression and anxiety, very common for almost everybody with OCD, right? Like, the question is, like, is it a chicken and egg thing? Like, are you chemically depressed and anxious, therefore you experience both at the same time? Is all of that uncertainty and anxiety you experience your whole life resulting in depression at a young age that existentially compounds, gets worse? Or like what are your thoughts? Like, what, you know, and you know, not that we have a definitive answer, but what's your life experience tell you?
My life experience tells me that, like, it's OCD first, then anxiety. And so the OCD informs the anxiety, which then informs the depression. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, I'll have a thought pop into my head, like, at the worst of it, before I check myself in, like, the day I knew it was time to go, forgot what the thought was, but it scared me so fucking bad that I went into a panic attack about it, and remembering thinking, this is never going to be better, which then made me depressed. And that depression was, like, you know, long standing, where I'm like, yes, again, I'm never going to be healed from this. I'm never going to be happy, which then, you know, just makes me anxious again, which then makes me depressed. So that, I think, like, I'm sure it's maybe different for different people, but I tend to think that that is probably the trajectory for most people, with the anxiety and depression maybe flip-flopping.
Exactly. And so you had an experience where the flip happened, where it was very depression-led, and then you had anxiety. Have you ever had something like that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because the depression is, like, again, where you're just like, I can't, like, for me, anyway, I'm like, I don't want to shower, I don't want to eat, I don't want to talk to anybody. And then you're like, oh my God, is this going to be my life forever? Mm-hmm. And then the chest starts to tighten, you start to panic, and you get all this anxious energy. I 1,000% have been there before.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like your harm thoughts sometimes, like, are build on, like, do they attack you, meaning, like, you're in a low state, you're feeling depressed, so then your brain, like, latches on and tells you should, you know, do it, take your life.
That's when it's, like, ripe, right? Yeah. It's like, when I'm as happy as I can be, those, like, self-harm, they'll pop in there sometimes just as an intrusive thought, but like for like a proper theme, it's usually when I'm at my lowest, because that's like when it's just, again, it's just like mold to moisture, where it's like, oh, you're feeling like shit. Well, you should just, you know, go get a knife right there. You keep your medicine right there. You can do it anytime you want.
I mean, almost like wild to think about, like therapeutically, some intervention that actually starts with depression, because I have the same experience where, you know, you have very depressive states that your brain latches onto, and then the anxiety goes wild in those states. Yes. Sometimes we get OCD a little backwards, where we just think it's like all about anxiety. It's so intertwined. I think it's so hard to decouple them.
I agree. Yeah.
Just my personal opinion there. So last like major question for you. What is there anything else that you want to share? Like, there's so many aspects to your life experience, this condition, like what it is, what it feels like, sounds like. Anything that you want to share with people exactly like you and I, that is at your heart right now?
You're not a monster. Again, thoughts don't become things. Thoughts are just fucking things. I need to get one of those like signs that you see at TJ Maxx in that weird font that says thoughts are fucking things, and give it away to other folks like us on the internet. Because that is what gets me through the roughest parts of it. That's what gets me through. And, you know, there will be a day. I don't know when that day will come where, you know, access to care is not going to be such a fucking foreign ideology, where people can get people of all socioeconomic, gender, sexual, racial backgrounds will be able, differences will be able to have the access to care to things outside of just anxiety and depression, you know, because sometimes that can be the lazy, I'm going to say it, God, I hope I don't get dragged, but that can be the lazy psychiatrist's diagnosis, you know, and it just leaves us with there's so many other, you know, being bipolar or borderline personality disorder or OCD or whatever, like, you know, I want that stuff to be so much more normalized, because there's so many people who are suffering within the psych mental health complex, industrial complex. We're in it and we're getting help, but we're not getting the help we need. So we might as well be on the outside looking in. Might as well not begin having care, you know?
Yeah. This is like maybe a random thing to say. I don't know how to articulate it, but it's very refreshing having this conversation with someone who right now is dedicating their time to help people and not sell something. Like, there's nothing that you are here to sell. And I felt on just the daily grind of like being in the nonprofit and being in the agency world, as you know, running your own shop, just like constantly just meetings where people are selling something. So I just, your radical honesty is amazing. And I go back to,
I have to sell anything today.
Yeah. And I go back to when you were in my office in New York, and I was like, I really think you should be a Made of Millions board advisor. And you were like, you gave me your trust that like, it was something that you were willing to give a shot. And it's been cool so far. I think we've done some cool stuff together. So thank you for everything you're doing. And thanks for doing this podcast for Stu. Happy 6 year to Stu.
Stu, I feel like, I don't know if you watch Parks and Recreation, but I feel like we're Derry Merble when he takes over for Thoughts for Your Thoughts. Hopefully someone who is listening to this will understand who Derry Merble is. And I think he was actually taking over for Stu. Whatever. We could talk about that all day. Hope somebody, if you hear this, send me a DM and tell me that you've seen.
Okay. So speaking of where can people follow your agency in Los Angeles? Where can they follow you?
They can follow me. You guys can follow me on Instagram. That's where I'm at. I don't have Facebook or any of the other stuff. At beer_bottles_chainsaws. DM me. I will tell you what that means. It's really stupid. And at a very good job, which is also from Parks and Recreation. The name of our company comes from Parks and Rec. He said, DM us there and I will tell you about that, which is also very stupid. Yeah, but that's where you can find us. But thank you for this. I love that there is a space for so many people who think like us. You know, I love that.
Yeah. And so I just say, everyone, take a minute and check out averygoodjob.co. And follow Crystal and welcome her to this wild world. I mean, she's been in it for maybe longer than a lot of you, but if you guys haven't said hi yet, feel free to say hi. All right. Thank you so much, Crystal, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip / donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. Thanks to OCD Peers for sponsoring this week's special edition of the podcast. To find out more about their peer support groups for OCD and to meet others, head to ocdpeers.com, or the link will be in the description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.